Good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you're joining us from. Maybe good evening, in fact, as well. So today, a topic that has reigned supreme. Early April, Anthropic announced Mythos. To much fanfare, bold claims, and of course, fear. Technology has never been in the limelight so much since this announcement, with everybody talking about it. And that's on top of all of the chat around AI and hype around AI. But even world bankers were getting together, worried, and eager to understand the impact. Most, if not all, of our customers were instantly asking the same question of us. What does it mean for us? What should we do? And even in fact, actually, what are you guys doing? We're going to touch upon some of that a little later. But that was April. We're now mid-June. What do we know? What's changed? Because here at Integrity 360, we can predict the future. We organized this webinar to coincide with the release of Safe Mythos, Fable 5. But more on that later. So if I just move my slide on. Today, I am joined by Martin, my good colleague, Martin Porgita. Martin's passion for cybersecurity dates back as far as 1999. He co-founded Enclose in 2006 and managed as technical director for 18 years. When Enclose joined the Integrity 360 family at the end of 2024, Martin took up the role of our MDR CTO. He's heading up our MDR services, so a great person to have on this webinar to discuss all things Mythos. Martin is the brainchild behind CyberFire MDR, which is now our flagship MDR platform, being implemented across all regions across the world. So just before we continue to some housekeeping, there is a Q&A function. I expect lots of questions that people have throughout this, so please make use of that. It should be on your bottom bar, or if it's not, press those three dots for more. Also, this webinar is being recorded, so should you wish to watch back or share with colleagues, there will be a link sent out by our team as a follow-up afterwards. And if you wish to use them, there are translated captions available. And again, that should be on your bottom bar there somewhere. So, Martin, before we go any further, let's talk about you and set your stall out for where you are. Where do you stand on the AI spectrum?
Thanks, thanks, Rich. Yeah, I think anyone that knows me, every time I've done a talk or anything, and specifically around AI, I introduce myself as the skeptic. So I guess I fall into that kind of category. However, I mean, obviously, it can't be ignored completely. But I'm the kind of guy that likes to see things in action, and to really understand how they work and how pragmatic they actually are. So that's kind of where I am. I know AI has its uses, but when I see marketing campaigns from the big vendors nowadays, you got to be really careful. So that's kind of my stance, I would say.
Yeah. Well, we obviously talk about this quite a lot. I'm going to shock you. I'm a reformed AI skeptic. Now diving down that, in fact, actually embedded it in pretty much all parts of my life. And not to go off on a tangent, but also making sure that my children are using it and understanding the challenges with it, which I think is hugely important. But perhaps that's an entirely other webinar that we can have in the future. So look, let's get rid of those slides, and then we can really get down to business. And I guess the first piece is, what is Mythos? Now, don't if you think, oh, have I just joined another basic webinar that's teaching me to suck eggs? Don't worry, that's not. But I just want to preface it and say, Mythos obviously is a new AI model from Anthropic. But despite all of the hype and focus, it's not a cybersecurity tool at heart. It's just that this AI is reportedly very, very good at it. So, Martin, the real first question really is around AI threats. AI powered threats are definitely not new. There's been documented evidence of them being used over the last 12 months. But why the hype around Mythos?
Well, like you say, Mythos is not a cybersecurity specific LLM model. And I hate to say it, but a lot of the hype is just because of Anthropic's excellent marketing machine, you know? I mean, if you would have read the headlines immediately after, they spoke about it, you would have thought this is an LLM designed just to look for vulnerabilities, you know? And it was going to write this code. Like, that was just all over everywhere. So, yeah, I think that's what caused the hype, and we saw major reactions, like you say, in the stock market and everything, based on that. So, but if you look at it, all these other models, and they call them frontier models now, you know, state of the art, huge, huge models, that just have so much information in them. They all have very similar capabilities. So, you know, we shouldn't just be worried about Mythos. We should be worried about how this technology is advancing in general. And we need to pay attention to all the vendors, because many of them are releasing security-specific LLMs. There's even an evil one, if you want to call it that, that is designed just for hackers. So, I think we got to read past the headlines and understand what the real threat is. And back to my previous point about being careful about these marketing campaigns.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. Obviously, there is evil GPT that's there and available. The real skeptic could point out that Anthropic is reportedly approaching the stage of where they IPO. So, good news like this definitely helps with that future share price. So there are lots of considerations there around marketing, but there are areas where it isn't just hype. Things like that, and as you say, everything around it was around vulnerability discovery and its cybersecurity use rather than anything else. But actually, you're 100% right. When you see the news, even when I think I was in a taxi in Joburg, actually, when sort of first got flagged to me, and flicking through the headlines, you're right, you would have assumed that it's a cybersecurity tool. But some of that is because it's it has been successful in what it's done. That 27-year-old vulnerability in OpenBSD, that 16-year-old vulnerability it found in FF MPEG. So there are elements that aren't hype, but there's still a little bit there.
Yeah, 100%. I just the size of the model, and these tools are getting better. Those things need to be put in context. For instance, that a lot of those open source tools, the code is available, and they generally don't have bug bounty programs. So no one is getting paid to find those vulnerabilities. So it makes sense to send a machine at it. But I think that the cost for that OpenBSD vulnerability in terms of tokens was something like $20,000 just to find that one vulnerability. So yes, even if the attackers were able to access the source code of whatever they want to analyze, they would have to spend quite a bit of money on tokens. And I think the token cost is making more of a noise now. You said that, you spoke about the IPO now. These companies are spending a lot of money on hardware, and they need to recover the cost. So, attackers don't have free access to these tools. Even many nation states don't have access to these tools. You saw the US government wanting to use Anthropic, and then they used OpenAI in the end. So, this is going to become a more scarce resource or a more expensive resource. And the attackers aren't going to get free access to it. So I think that needs to be considered. But 100%, it is, there's certainly value in this, and attackers can use it. I think they're going to have to be a little bit more targeted. They can't just, be very blatant, because then they're going to run out of tokens.
Yeah. And yeah, you talk about that cost of entry there, $20,000 per vulnerability. It's a I guess it's a throwaway comment. That was from Mythos, though, that as part of their first release and information. I suppose from a nation state perspective, that's a drop in the ocean. But that huge volume most everyday attackers. And we talk about script kiddies in the past, and that's kind of come back round again with the ability to or that cost of that barrier to knowledge in terms of entry dropping. But I don't know how many of those have $20,000 lying around. The I certainly don't. Not that I'm in that category. But further context that we need to put in there is the way that Mythos was used to identify these vulnerabilities. With all guardrails turned off, effectively turned up to the max. That is not real world examples of how it's going to be. That allowed them to avoid having to re-prompt and try and bypass anything. So it was stacked towards being able to identify them, which is great from a vulnerability discovery perspective, but does tune things down a little bit when we think about the real world use of it. I mean, just some of those other successes behind it. There have been some independent reviews of it, which actually, if you read them, particularly if you look at the UK AI Security Institute, obviously they did some CTF testing of it back in April. And if you look at the abilities of it, in some cases it was the same or not quite as good as existing models in some of the tests that they ran at the lower end. Where it did come into its own was being able to chain those vulnerabilities together to work through an environment. In fact, actually, it's the only one so far that that has managed to complete all of them, but still sat side by side with I can't remember if it was ChatGPT 5.4 or Opus 4.6, but in terms of getting reasonably far on a consistent basis. And I think that was one of the things that the findings from that initial release was the ability to chain vulnerabilities together in the Linux kernel, which did help to it. So as much as there's lots of hype, there is a lot of truth behind it. That we see on the face of it. And it led to Project Glasswing. Now, that started running pretty much instantly, with those select members. But has that really changed anything, Martin?
Presumably, all the companies that have had access to Glasswing have now a big pile of vulnerabilities that they need to patch, and hopefully they patch them quick. It's remarkably there was some, not necessarily around Mythos, but just in terms of vulnerability submissions by AI. If you look at the Linux kernel, that has shot through the roof, but a lot of them are duplicate reports, and reporting a vulnerability is quite easy. Patching it and verifying it is very, very time consuming, and I'm not sure the AI is kind of used to its full capacity in that sense. So are we seeing a bunch of 0 days that we've never seen before? I don't think there's been an increase dramatically as of yet. Maybe the coming months will tell. So that's something that we probably need to pay attention to.
Yeah, and obviously, if you read Mythos back in May, released their initial update on the project, and it reported that there was from its members, from its partners, that there was over 10,000 critical and high vulnerabilities that had been discovered. So in the space of a month, those members reporting 10x increase in bug finding. And you sort of mentioned, well, do you know what? They've now got this huge pile of vulnerabilities. Actually, sorry, you mentioned 0 days. I think that's the longer term fear. But we'll come on to that in the future. Sorry, in the future, a little bit later in this webinar to be more specific. But they have now got this huge pile of vulnerabilities. But it's a little bit, well, what do you do with it? Looking at patching trends, we look at Palo Alto as an example. in their last patching round, if we look at it in a period, since Glasswing and since now, you see there's a five times increase in compared to normal. And that I think what you called out there is the one of the big challenges, downstream. We're obviously all downstream from these vendors, that will impact us eventually. But the impact to them right now, as you say, they've got 10,000 plus vulnerabilities, critical and high. What do you do about them? Because vulnerability validation, patch creation, right now just cannot be scaled to keep pace with AI. And I think that the AI discovery. So I think you're bang on when you say that AI not being used. I think that is going to be the challenge. How can we get confident and comfortable with AI to be able to do that validation, to be able to do that patching, so that we can do the human review? But even that human review of 10,000, I think it was, I'm going to say Cloudflare. I think they discovered 2,000 vulnerabilities in their platform, of which 500 were critical and high. Even if AI was crushing through those to go, here's the validation, here's the code. If Cloudflare is a security company, or actually any company, just accepts, they go, great, that's a patch, let's go and apply that. Not only is that going to probably increase risk, we've seen patched code being pushed out by major cloud vendors that suddenly wiped off the cloud instances. I say instances, obviously, an AWS and Azure through a misconfiguration. So that's kind of what that risk is. So I think that's going to be forever there. That,
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, just to add to that, threat actors, there's no shortage of vulnerabilities at the moment for them, right? So most of them are gaining access via vulnerabilities already. So it's if you ask a threat actor, Mythos can generate anything for you, what would you want? Probably some vulnerabilities is not on top of their list. They can they can choose from a number of them already. Most of the, we've seen a trend over the last couple of years, not just from since AI, but for attackers to start attacking external infrastructure. So definitely we need to be on top of those vulnerabilities when they're external facing.
Yeah, and obviously as a service provider, we have a good bit of data from platforms that that we manage, that we ingest, and actually one of those that we include in our reports I do a little bit of analysis on is the attempts to exploit vulnerabilities, as you say, on that perimeter. Diving down into that data, I'm just trying to cast my mind back to the more exact stats. But in general, what we see is so many vulnerability exploit attempts are back to the 2010s that were released, and they're only doing that because they're successful. So I think again, I completely agree that that there's probably not a need for it. Still, that well, I say there's not a need for it. You can still be successful very much without it. So let's move the conversation on. And we started talking about it, but in reality, in your view, what is the threat from Mythos? Is that is what everybody and probably most people on this webinar want to understand as much as possible.
Yeah, so I'll break it down into a few different things. Certainly, the barrier to entry and the speed that threat actors can execute certain functions is improved for them. But I should point out that's more relevant to I want to say the script kiddies kind of segment of the adversaries. If you look at the more advanced threat actors, the ransomware groups, they've built a lot of automation already years ago, So it's, they're not going to be asking Mythos to do discovery or, pick up something about this target. They will put it into their SecOps platform or attack ops, if we could call it that, to do that discovery already. And they've kind of manufactured that many years ago. But I guess the barrier to entry is a little bit lower. And so that's kind of one of the key things we need to keep in mind.
Well, just so I jump in, that we normally leave the Q&A right to the end, but I've seen just a question that's popped in there of what's the most overhyped AI security threat and what's the most underrated one. I think the most overhyped one, and I think this probably gets lost in translation. We have a lot of customers that have come and asked, what we're doing, what the threat is. What are we doing to proactively mitigate against Mythos? And I think some of that is the hype that that's leading to that to those questions is the hype about things like AI powered polymorphic malware. That there's some secret new fangled attack vector that it's creating. And when we look at what the actual threat is, I think you can look at it in a few different ways. On the one hand, we talked about the ability to identify vulnerabilities on a scale that we've never seen before, and that threat, and it is a I guess a longer term threat, or what's the best way of putting it? It's and actually it's not really tangible right now because things like Glasswing, things like the initial use or and again, I keep using the word hype, and I think we'll both keep using that word hype around Mythos preview, was that that ability to discover them, but bring that to a and sorry, that ability to discover them. So can they be used to exploit our systems before they're patched? And I suppose that's one of two ways. There's 0 days that you mentioned before, that there's always a fear about a 0 day because you'd be attacked by something you don't even know exists. So there's the fear of an unknown. I suppose one of the other fears are the responsible disclosure period that is seen in the security industry, which is 90 days normally, or 45 days after a patch has been released. 10,000 patches will be, or sorry, 10,000 plus vulnerabilities. That lag. How does that play out? Because 90 days is not long enough to be able to patch all of those. So I think that's one of the big threats and more big concerns is are there going to be vulnerabilities that we simply can't defend ourselves against? So,
Yeah, I think if definitely we need to get better at patching. And guess what? We're talking about AI and what is the thing that we need to do? Patch, right? That's what we've been saying for years, and we've been getting better at it, but this is just going to push us to really keep on top of that one. I just wanted to go back to your point about the polymorphic viral code or the code that there's some hype around that as well. Again, these are things that attackers have been doing for years. And that's why we came up with EDR. EDR doesn't look at signatures, it looks at behavior. So if a malware changes its code, it still picks up the behavior. So some of these things, AI can write the code, but the attackers have actually been, morphing their code to adapt. And that's why they moved to living off the land type techniques to pull off their attacks, because the EDR was getting better. So again, I think that's also a little overhyped. I'm not saying it's not a thing, but we just need to be careful about that.
yeah, and I think the you know that that's yeah, I mean, there's a very valid point around malware, that there's less focus on it for from my perspective as living off the land is the way. I mean, look at all of the attackers that make use of remote management tools, because they can effectively sneak them in or even use what's there, but obviously it's a lot harder to compromise. On that 0 day vulnerability front, I suppose the thing that we need to bear in mind is that, firstly, Mythos in the way that it was utilized in by Project Glasswing and by Anthropic in that those initial tests isn't available to attackers. We're going to come on to Fable 5 in a little bit. But isn't there, and they were with all guardrails off. So, so even once it gets to the point where it's released, once it gets into the hands of the attackers, they're not going to have that ability to turn all those guardrails off and crunch $20,000 to identify a single vulnerability. So I think really, if I look at what the threat is on the vulnerability side, the threat that we face is nothing new. It's cyber hygiene, and our ability to patch and also react when there's not a patch. I think that is the threat that that's there, is from the speed at which vulnerabilities are identified, and the threat to us, or the impact to us, is that we're not going to be able to react quick enough. We don't have the controls, the abilities to do that, because sometimes we'll be trading off, the capability or functionality or availability of elements of a system. So I think that's definitely that primary threat. We could
Yeah,
even talk about, sorry.
I was just going to say, I think the capability of the AI linking vulnerabilities and attack paths, I think that might be something that we need to be aware of. Just because it brings so much these larger models, they've seen so many attack paths, and it can bring new light to adversaries. And really what you're saying though is probably the biggest thing is being able to react quicker to patching, to being able to patch. We need to be able to patch quicker. And it speaks to resilience as well. We've been saying for years now it's not a matter of if, but a matter of when. But when something does happen, we need to be able to isolate really quickly. And that goes back to the normal kind of boring hygiene things that we've been talking about for years, network segregation, protecting identities, all those type of things, which isn't as interesting as AI, but it just, it keeps going back to that.
Actually, it reminds me, I did see it as a post from Anton Chivokin, obviously a bit of a leader in cybersecurity, a couple of years ago, sort of saying, John, we've been talking about cyber hygiene for so long, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. Do we need to maybe talk about something different? But for my money, no. It's critically important. One of those things you just pointed out is if we look at those chained vulnerability exploits, I think there's probably two other things that that the threat is there. So one of them is that ability for AI to be the attacker that is moving in and making use of not just vulnerabilities, but then moving and doing sort of action on objectives, assuming acting as a an attacker. So there is that threat there. Because it can, build the attack paths, understand the attack paths. But what is the real threat there? It's scale. The ability to do that at mass scale. And again, when it comes to speed, if you compare an AI threat actor in that world where it's chaining them all together. And I say in that world, we look at the likes of Expo, using their AI trained security research model or platform. They obviously have been sitting number one on the HackerOne bug bounty board because of its ability to identify vulnerabilities. But if we look at the comparison between them, you've got on the AI side, you've got that speed, you've got so many virtual attackers behind there. So does it, on that threat potentially is that more and more organizations become a target, that weren't targeted before because there just wasn't the capacity on the attacker side, if we can use the word capacity. So, I think that is, also one of those principal threats that that we're going to face.
Yeah, well, I think just on the threats, I think maybe something that's a little bit underhyped is the footprint that this adds to organizations that are implementing AI. We're reading more and more about attacks against organizations using their chatbots to exfiltrate data. We're spending so much time worrying about 0 days, and business is so adamant about implementing AI technology so we don't fall behind. And what inevitably happens is security is not given the attention it is needed when implementing these tools. And I suspect that we'll continue to see these. I mean, I've seen a number of reports now where attackers literally take over and organize it, well, not take over, but they exfiltrate data and they can run commands via chatbots on websites. That's just one example. And I think we're going to see more of that. So probably if I had concerns and what to worry about, that would be. And I was, implementing AI, technology in the business. That would be one of the top things that I would be worried about. And that's not specific to Mythos, right? That's pretty much, that can, they can use any LLM in the back end that to do that.
Yeah, no, indeed. And I that kind of talks a little bit to the getting, blinded by the light of Mythos and ignoring a lot of the other things that are going on. I mean, yeah, our security testers, have had, they're doing a lot of testing against AI systems and getting a lot of success from being able to abuse those bots. I mean, although many of them have resolved the issue, but being able to smuggle instructions with ASCII code embedding in emojis, was relatively trivial for the teams to do, but that could abuse it. So I think, yeah, agree. We'll see, more attacks on AI, and will we see AI on AI, and again, in terms of that scale. So look, we've talked around the threats. We've spent a good amount of time worrying everybody. Let's start removing that worry and get back to our core title, which was Shields Up. What should we be doing? So, Martin, what should we be doing to counter Mythos right now?
Well, it goes back to what we said just now. It's getting those basics right. The third party risk was becoming a hot topic. For me now, it's even a multiplier. AI is a multiplier for third party risk. So we definitely need to be on top of that, and really understanding how third parties interact with our business. They're all going to be using AI as well. And the traditional path of threat actors getting in by a third party to organizations that are well secured, that's going to be a more of a risk. So we're definitely going to have to pay attention there. That's something we need to watch out for. I think that's probably one thing that maybe is overlooked a little bit.
And we've talked about it, those two key threats, the exploit of vulnerabilities that that are there. I think, right now, what do you need to be doing? Making sure that your vulnerability management, your threat exposure management programs, both externally fo focused, internally focused, are where they need to be. And that includes being able to make sure that you've got the intelligence to hand to be able to react to vulnerabilities. So, looking at partners that can give you that advice and guidance when things are breaking. It's impossible for all of us to be staring at the news, but we can come together to try and try and help that. So I think that's number one thing that we should be doing is looking at our patching practice. Look at our time to patch, our critical and vulnerability. Is it where it needs to be? There is a cost to ramping up your program and what your cycle is in terms of average time to patch. But I think that's an area that is it doesn't have the focus that it needs, but we should be stepping back and looking actually, what is that, what does that process look like? What are our objectives? And measuring against that, getting down to that, average time to patch 7 days below or lower, and really, taxing ourselves against, and maybe tax is not the right word, but pitting ourselves against that and making sure that we're achieving it. So I think, vulnerability management teams have, a little bit like Mythos has been the limelight. Really, they should be the ones that are in the limelight and making sure that, you have that strong capability. The other thing I think that we spoke about was around scale, and can AI help us, breach an organization? Even vulnerabilities obviously help that process. Can we, is that threat there from using, generative AI for things like conversational AI for vishing and others? We're seeing hugely increase. Will Mythos improve that? Time will tell. We're going to talk about Fable 5 in a minute. But yeah, that might change that. But I think even more than ever, we need to be in a position of assumed breach, and constantly working to identify, have we been breached, and making sure that we have that full capability to detect a breach. And you mentioned EDR being, a core part of that in terms of being able to look for behavior on a system. So, if a malware is different, but it doesn't really matter. We're not looking for signatures. But also, when we get to that living off the land, can we look at those behaviors? But organizations should be looking at how do you expand that to have full sight of everything that's going on in your environment. One of our speakers at Security First, for Vectra, Lucy, called out that, made a real good point that, attackers, they don't need to hack anymore. Really, they log in. So how can you identify that, use and abuse of an account from start to finish? So, if you don't have a detection capability that is joined up and broad across identity, across network, across your SaaS applications, across, users and endpoints, then I think that, you're going to be in a sort of weaker position, to be able to quickly respond to those. The other piece for myself, just going back to the vulnerabilities, is not just being able to patch as quick as possible, because we'll see vulnerabilities that are identified and disclosed within that period that don't have a patch for them. So have we got the controls in place to allow us to virtually patch? I mean, IPS systems, for example, something long forgotten, built into your next gen firewall. But are we there being able to, they're a very, very quick way from a, a network exploitation perspective to be able to block exploit attempts. So maybe we'll see a renaissance of the IPS systems that, that come in there. So I think, they're some of the things that we should be looking to be able to counter. And actually what those steps are, there probably needs to be we talk about resilience, we talk about organizations getting in a position to be able to recover and respond very, very quickly and make drastic decisions. Do we need to start factoring that in? Being able to assess, this vulnerability is so critical to us. It's actually more critical than us, turning off this system that is going to impact our business, because of the ramifications. So maybe we should even be going that far, but maybe that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, that's. I guess that speaks to ex understanding your exposure. But yeah, I agree with you. Those, we got to get better at the patching, regardless of how good we are. We got to get better at that, and then the resilience, being able to react. Because if we're talking about 0 days, there's no magic thing that we can ask Mythos to make the 0 day go away. If there's a 0 day out there, there will be an attacker that gets in, and our best position at that point would be to react quickly and to have our kind of underlying technologies, security controls in place, in a good state,
So we'll move on to Fable 5, and what I'm just going to do is I'm going to chuck this back up on the screen just to bring things to life. 2 seconds. So hopefully everyone can see that on my screen there. So Fable 5 was released earlier this week, 3 days ago, I'm going to say. I think it took a lot by surprise. I think there was a tiny rumor that it was going to be released not long before, but then it suddenly appeared. So what is Fable 5? So Fable 5 is effectively safe mythos. So, it is that cut down version that has been released that is, tied to mythos, with all of the things that were talked about as threats, removed from it or guardrailed off. So in effect, many cybersecurity topics are limited. So I've been playing with it, and I'll just very, very quickly just put that into context. So I decided to ask Fable 5 through my Claude subscription. I was just asked, I'm a CTO of a cybersecurity provider, and I want to enhance our offensive security services and capabilities. I quickly asked it, how can I build an AI-powered service to automate test for vulnerabilities? So you could say nothing malicious there. But didn't really buy into my CTO cybersecurity story there. But actually, instantly, the response from Claude and from Fable 5 was to say, do you know what? I'm switching to Opus 4.8, because of the safety measures that are in place. So anything really, as it says there, flags messages on most cybersecurity and biology topics. So instantly downgrades it. So that talks to actually this bit release, has been very, very heavily guardrailed to make sure that it can't be used by attackers. Now, I've only had a couple of days at it, and I'm sure some of our security testers will also have been looking at how robust that is. But on the face of it, they've released Fable 5. Is there should there be loads of hype and panic around that? Well, they've tuned it right down in terms of its capability. Now.
Rich, sorry, I just wanted to share something that I actually saw this morning. I don't want to derail your presentation here, but just in terms of these guide rails, we see attackers actually taking advantage of these. Some research that we saw, I saw posted, where attackers are actually inserting comments inside their malicious code to make it look like they want, asking AI to build a chemical weapon or something, and immediately any type of analysis that AI would do shuts it down. So these guide rails are kind of there to help us, but in the same sense, they can also hurt us in some sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. I tell you, we'll come on to that in a second. So, just carrying on this story that I'm drawing out probably a bit too long because we want to save some time for Q&A. But you might say, actually, do you know what, that I am asking something to create a tool that can go and test and exploit vulnerabilities. So, it's might have switched to Opus 4.8, but it's a ridiculous ask and should be guardrailed it off. Well, actually, that's not the case. It very, very quickly just switched to it and then gave me all the details, and I can carry on diving down on that. You did mention something important there, and it's actually also something that I've seen looking in forums and discussions. Is that how can we bypass these guardrails? And actually, guardrails in general, is something that is widely acknowledged will always be there. We're always going to be improving, and some researchers have seen evidence of actually asking it for doing code reviews, which I haven't got anything to do with cybersecurity, but as you say, embedding something that's driving it towards it. Brilliant. There's somebody at my door that probably won't go away. So, so apologies if you can hear my doorbell ringing. That is a challenge that potentially is going to be there over time. So we will find out. So let's we've taken up quite a bit of time, and let's move on to the Q&A. But just before we do that, I just want to call out that we do have some upcoming webinars and events. With another webinar coming up, looking at how do we really defend against organized crime. And we have our Security First conferences continuing around the EMEA and into North America now. So let's get into the Q&A. So a couple of questions coming here. We actually got quite a few questions, so we might run over or just call out. If we don't answer your question, we will follow up with a written answer, as we don't really want to go too much past the hour. So quick question there is Mythos creating a stronger advantage for attackers or defenders today? My view is neither currently, clearly, as it's not there. And although we'll see how Fable 5 pans out. But I think probably the important thing to call out is we've only focused on it from an attacker's perspective. How good is it at defending? I was at DEF CON last year, and there was a competition running for building AI that's going to defend environments. I think that's probably one of those things that are, from a cybersecurity perspective, that's hugely underrated, underspoken about. Moving on to the next one, does a gated model like Mythos meaningfully raise the threat level, or should we assume capable attackers already have equivalent tools?
Yeah, I think a lot of the attackers have productionized their methodology, and they don't actually need AI to do a lot of the things that we would think might be useful to them. So sure, it's useful, certainly for the lower entry. But if you're talking about capable threat actor groups, they've already automated a lot of their operations. So I don't really see that as a huge advantage to them.
Yeah, I'd say that I think the use of existing LLMs is already there. We had the question on overhyped AI security threat and what's the most underrated. I think we answered that as we went there. A question here is what risks should we observe? And again, I think we've touched upon that in turn. And just to, I guess, recap the answer there. The threats that we should observe is the threats to our infrastructure that the vulnerabilities pose, but also that assume that we're exploited, and making sure that our capability to detect and then respond to events is top to bottom of our environments and not focused on one single area. Next question, Martin, is will Mythos replace Kali Linux?
Well, certainly it's we see. I mean, when I talk about Kali Linux, I don't think I've remember once that I've seen an actual threat actor use Kali Linux. It's mostly pen testers. So absolutely, pen testers are going to be using Mythos in place of Linux. Maybe Kali Linux, probably not, but certainly to augment it, that will definitely be done. They're doing it already. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's plugins for Kali that will help you plug into LLMs to help you with attacking any kind of target.
Yeah, well, as we saw, Fable 5 is not going to help me build a replacement for Kali Linux, but I agree. I don't think it will go away. It is just going to be enhanced, and we'll see that those integration. I mean, we can focus on Mythos, but LLM use in general. But I do see a threat to, for example, there's a whole cybersecurity industry around offensive security and tools. How can we use AI to utilize those tools like Burp Suite, even Nmap, to automate the entire process? So, just quicker, faster, and also in the hands of the attackers. So scale. So another question here is to respond to Mythos and the scale of vulnerabilities in general. I assume it is most important to direct patching efforts based on understanding of your environment, i.e., focus on systems most at risk, not segmented, etc., instead of focusing on volume of patching. Does this risk and control based on view demonstrate a better approach to patch management? 100% agree. Gartner coined the CTEM acronym, really focused on this, to look at how do we prioritize vulnerabilities to make sure that we're focused on the right ones in terms of priority. And actually, we've got effectively a follow-up webinar to this, and I'm going to say it's on the 6th of July. Someone's going to probably correct me in the chat in a second. With Qualys, where we're actually going to get down into the depths of this and looking at exactly. We've talked about those high-level threats, what we should be doing, and actually get into the weeds of how do you make that very much effective. So look out for that one.
Just a quick point on that. I mean, if you take Mythos out of that question and wind back 5 years, it's still a valid question and still should be applied, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. And actually, just on that very, very quickly, we started out at the very start talking about hype. What we didn't obviously mention was, you can look at the headlines from 18 months, 2 years ago, whenever it was, of OpenAI saying, "Whoa, we've got, we've got ChatGPT 2 that's just too dangerous to release." So, a common, a common tactic there. So, maybe you can talk about hype even more there. Next question here is why Mythos, which will be available only to some governments and some corporations only, and not seeing Fable, which is like Mythos, very limited for the rest of us humans and little companies and hackers. Mythos would be a danger if the authorities and corporations involved have weak security and an attacker uses their infra to be able to gain access to Mythos and use it. That is a very, very good point. There is that assumption, as I mentioned at the start, the UK's AI Cyber Security Institute. They had access to it, obviously NVIDIA, Palo Alto, Microsoft, Linux Foundation, all having access to it, which is fine behind those closed doors. But that's probably something that we haven't touched upon. So a great call out there that we're only going to be as strong as that those institutions and organizations have the security controls in place. I think a great call out. I'm sorry, there's actually a follow-on part to that question here. Could we look into creating our own Fable-based agents that can help in protecting against Mythos Fable-involved attacks? Well, that's what we were talking about a second ago. That's probably that forgotten piece. And yes, now interestingly, when I was asking Claude Fable 5 some questions around cybersecurity. Yeah, as they said in that prompt that I got back, that it's most topics. Actually, when it was on the blue side of the house, so more about how do we defend and how do, in fact, actually, I was talking to asking about, using agents to defend networks. Quite happy to talk about that. There are that ability exists. But what you might invariably find is you're getting down into probably the weeds and the nuts and bolts of it, and suddenly finding, whoa, that's off record. Sorry, that's untouchable, and you need to go back to Opus, which is a highly capable LLM, let's not forget. So so that's there. So I'll just click these off and look at. Quick time check. We've got 5 minutes, so we can do some more questions. Please keep them coming in if you do have more questions. A question here: where do you sit on Anthropic checking their own homework? Are we moving into a position where we rely on Claude to write our code and check it for vulnerabilities?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I think that's going to surface more and more as we see more AI written code going into production. That's definitely a risk, and we don't want that happening. Maybe the answer is getting ChatGPT to check Claude's code. I don't know. But at the end of the day, these LLMs, they just have huge repositories of code and they're able to combine them. And if you asked, our internal development team, they regularly check some of the code that's been put together by these systems, and it's really substandard. And a lot of organizations are putting that straight into production. So I think That is something we're going to watch out for, and that's going to potentially produce more vulnerabilities, which might be difficult to check, because they're custom code, and they're not, there's no CVEs or anything for it. So that's definitely something that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, I like that idea of pitting the two AI models against each other and stoking the fire under. I can see it getting competitive on who can find more vulnerabilities in the code that it's writing. But it is a very good point. And actually, I think there's two things that I talk about at our Security First conferences. Is one around the ability to use it from developer teams of asking write secure code, and it will write secure code. But then you can ask it, make it more secure, and it'll come back with even more and more. So when do you ever stop?
Yeah.
But there's the risk from vibe coded applications. So be very wary of those going live into your environments. That's the sort of the new shadow IT of the world is shadow written applications via vibe coding. Yeah, they have to go through the SDLC and make sure that they are delivered, deployed, and built completely secure. So I think that is a very important point. In terms of high level takeaways, is the key recommendation patch faster and don't panic. I think that is a great takeaway from it. Patch faster, make sure your patching programs are as robust as they can be. Make sure that you've got that ability to constantly assume breach and identify it. And definitely don't panic. I think the pair of us have to walk people back from the ledge in the fear of the hyper stoked fear that it's that's out there. And the answer should be, if your security programs are and your cyber hygiene is where it needs to be, then you're doing everything you can to protect your environment.
Yeah.
Right, last question, which I think just trying to do a time check there. We've got 2 minutes on this one, so perhaps we might answer this one in a bit more detail afterwards. But should cybersecurity teams work with infrastructure and applications teams to agree risk-based patching decisions? Yes, I think this comes back to the CTEM question. So we might put more of a complete answer together as a follow-up. But we are completely at time. I knew this would absolutely run to time. I think it's such a great topic. It's up there for me with quantum computing for anybody who wants to spend an hour listening to me talking about that. But just as we finish, I'm just going to say thank you very much to Martin for joining us and providing his view as the AI skeptic and alongside my reformed AI skeptic views. And thank you very much to everybody that has joined. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Cheers.